want to tell you about a documentary we have here as part of our Nature on One series next Monday at 3 p.m.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
I'd go with chicken.
Why?
Because the egg had to come from somewhere, so it came from the chicken.
Had to be the chicken, yeah.
Why?
Because you couldn't get an egg without a chicken.
But you couldn't get a chicken without an egg, but you couldn't get an egg without a chicken.
This holiday Monday, ornithologist Niall Hatch explores the wonderful world of birds' eggs.
There must be two chickens.
The secret behind the shell of a bird's egg is that it's full of tiny holes, which allow the developing chick within to breathe oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide.
That's Nature on One, Monday at 3 o'clock on RTE Radio 1 and the RTE Radio app.
Well, I certainly hope that's whet your appetite for a wonderful documentary about birds' eggs next Monday afternoon, presented by Niall Hatch. Niall!
Yes, it's all about a favourite topic of mine and an object that has been described very memorably as perhaps the most perfect thing in the universe. So how about that for a build-up? It's about birds' eggs.
Mm.
I've been fascinated by birds all of my life, as you know, Derek, and I'm well aware that of all of the hundreds of billions of birds on Earth at the moment, every single one of those started life inside an egg. It had to hatch out of that and then develop from there. And for years, I've been fascinated by how eggs are produced, how they're such wonderfully self-contained reproductive units for these birds. Because unlike placental mammals, such as we humans, the females of our species carry their offspring around inside their bodies, the embryos at least, for the first 9 months of their existence. Well, birds are different. They lay their eggs and those embryos then develop outside of the body. You know, for this documentary, we asked quite a few people, what's an egg? Where do eggs come from? Those sort of questions. And it's very interesting to me because the majority of animals in the world lay eggs. If you think about insects, fish, frogs, so many different species do this. Even a few mammals, the duck-billed platypus in Australia is a great example of that too. But almost everybody comes back and they say one of two things. They may say birds,
mm-hmm.
or even more commonly, they say chickens. And it is quite interesting. That's one of the main thrusts of this. I wanted to sort of explore, how did birds' eggs evolve? They're quite a unique thing. The thing that sets birds' eggs apart from all other eggs, all the other ones that I mentioned, from all these other creatures on the planet, birds have hard-shelled eggs that are pointed at one end and rounded at the other, and they have porous shells that actually allow the embryo inside to breathe. They can actually take in oxygen, take out carbon dioxide all the time while being inside a waterproof, protective, hard container, which is really unique in the world. There aren't any other animals in the world that have that arrangement. So that's what's unique about birds' eggs. But we may hear in the documentary that perhaps that didn't start with birds. Maybe someone else came before either the chicken
dun,
or the egg.
Dun, dun. Well, now I know a little bit about birds' eggs. Not very much, because I used to watch, as you know, the Blue Tits,
yes,
in my back garden, and we used to stream it live. And before that, we had Jackie and Daw, the pair of jackdaws that had nested in County Kildare.
That's right.
And we were looking at those birds and how they minded and cared for the eggs. And I remember about the Blue Tits in particular, how many they laid, given that the bird is so small, because they can lay up to 16 eggs, as I understand it. And the bird's only, what, weighs about 11 grams or something?
Yeah, absolutely. And each of those eggs weighs about a gram. So if you think about that, over the course of that, just that one breeding season, the female is laying more than her own body weight in eggs, which is quite remarkable. And inside those eggs, you have the yellow part, the yolk. You have the albumen, the white part of the egg. You have all sorts of other things too, but they're the main parts in there. That's very nutritious. It's there to protect and feed the growing embryo inside. Well, the only place that nutrition can come from is from within the mother's own body. Her own food reserves provide those. Eggs come in a hard shell. It's made of a substance called calcium carbonate, the same stuff as chalk and limestone, the same stuff as snail shells as well. The bird has to have that in her body to be able to produce those eggshells. So if you think the physical toll and the requirements on that female's body to lay those eggs, why would she do that? It must take a big toll on her. But her whole purpose in life is to pass on her genes to the next generation. And that's how you do it. And birds will lay the optimum number of eggs for that kind of survival to match the amount of food and other resources that are around. So some birds, a lot of seabirds, for example, and birds like swifts as well, they may lay just one egg, but they invest a lot of time and attention into that egg. Whereas with other birds, they have a bit more of an attrition rate. They're not expecting that all, or at least evolution hasn't provided for all of those chicks to survive. Just the very fittest will. But if there's a boom year and you have lots of food around, well, more of those chicks on average will survive, and then more of the genes will be passed on to next generation.
So it's all to do with resources.
It's all to do with resources.
Internal and external.
Precisely, absolutely. you know, the way that birds do it is very different to the way that humans do it. So because they're not carrying these eggs around in their bodies, birds don't become pregnant in the same way that a human or another mammal might do. Because of that, they can actually diversify a bit more, and they can you know, mean that they don't have to carry them around with them. But it also has some other downsides. It means that they can't warm them inside their own bodies the way that most mammals can. We don't have to worry about, or mothers don't have to worry about keeping the embryo warm. The body does that automatically. The birds can't do that. So then, of course, they have to incubate those eggs.
Yeah, I was going to say, they do have to do it, although they're not doing it internally. They are doing it externally.
Absolutely.
So they sit on them. That's why they've got a brood patch, isn't it?
It is. That's the bare patch of skin, basically the bald spot on the belly of the bird. They lose a patch of feathers there that allows direct skin on eggshell contact. And I remember, Derek, when we were looking at the blue tits in your back garden, there was a nationwide phenomenon. People really got into it. And a lot of people are very excited to see that it's not just the case that the blue tit or any other bird is just sitting on those eggs doing nothing. They're getting up all the time. They're turning them around. They're putting the ones on the top down at the bottom to rotate them, move them around to make sure that heat is evenly distributed. And the bird somehow knows how to do that intrinsically. It knows to do that. If it didn't move those eggs around, there'd be a risk of the ones on the top maybe overheating, the ones on the bottom chilling. The embryos wouldn't develop properly, even if at all. And we also know that birds have a higher body temperature than we humans do. They're about 40 degrees Celsius. At that temperature, we'd be dead. So within the birds, though, we know that that's too hot for an embryo to develop. So they have to have them outside the body. It's fascinating stuff. I learned so much researching
this. Well, now, can I ask you a question?
Of course you can, Derek.
I'm thinking now of crocodilians.
Yes. Crocodilians, yeah, the closest living relatives of birds.
Yeah. Now, they lay eggs.
Yes.
And they make a mound and they put all sorts of vegetation over the eggs and they lay on the vegetation over the eggs and they can control the temperature of the nest in there by doing that. They're not laying directly on the eggs. Am I right?
That's absolutely
right. And they can determine the sex of the offspring, as I understand it, by controlling the temperature. So if it's 32 degrees, it might be a male, or if it's 34 degrees, it might be a female. I'm not sure those figures are accurate, but you get what I'm saying. Now, given that they're such close relatives, I'm wondering, is there any bird in the world that does something similar?
No. We know that, as is the case with mammals, that seems to be fixed at the moment of conception. So it's all about chromosomes and that sort of genetic exchange. It's not governed by the temperature. With many crocodilians and with the crocodilians and many other reptiles as well, however it is. And actually, that's one of the challenges when it comes to conservation in an era of climate change. One of the problems that many reptile species may face, or indeed are already facing, another example would be sea turtles. They have exactly the same arrangement. It means that because the temperature is rising, you have too many of one gender being produced. And then that leads to skewing of the population. And eventually it'll mean, essentially, it could mean complete collapse. So they're already looking with some of these reptiles that perhaps artificial incubation may be the only way forward for some of them, at least for now, because the breeding colony areas, the nesting areas are too warm. And that's something that's just going to get worse and worse. Birds at least don't have to face that challenge. Climate change has many other problems for them, but at least it doesn't affect the sex of their offspring.
But is there not one bird out there that doesn't incubate its own eggs?
Yes.
In the traditional sense, by laying the eggs and then incubating them by putting its body on top of them and forming that brood patch.
Yes, there's a family of birds called the megapodes, which are found in the Australasian region. The best known is probably a bird called the mallee fowl, which is found in Australia. Sometimes called the brush turkey, not related to true turkeys though at all.
Or brushes
indeed. and what they do is quite similar to what the crocodiles do. What they do is they eggs are laid by the female, of course. The male constructs a mound of vegetation over the top of them, sometimes quite a big heap of vegetation. And what happens is that vegetation then starts to decompose. And as it decomposes, as anyone who has a compost heap in their garden will know,
warm.
Gets very warm. And that's the heat then that is used to warm those eggs and to start those embryos developing. But it's not that the male, because in this case it's just the male that cares for these eggs, it's not that he can just walk away and leave it, because that's too random. Weather will change. Vegetation may decay at different rates. It could get too hot, could get too cool. Mm. So what he does is he monitors this all the time, and he will then remove or add pieces of vegetation to control perfectly the temperature.
But he won't incubate.
No, he doesn't incubate with his own
body.
But
the crocodile does.
Yeah, crocodile does, yes.
Now back to my blue tits.
Yes.
We were saying that they can lay up to 16 eggs, and the eggs are tiny, and the bird is tiny, but it's not the smallest bird in the world. I think that honour and glory goes to the hummingbirds, if I'm not mistaken.
The bee hummingbird of Cuba is the tiniest, yeah.
But does the bee hummingbird of Cuba then lay the smallest egg in the world? Did you talk to anybody about big and small eggs?
I did for this documentary. I had a great conversation with Eric Dempsey. It was absolutely fantastic. What better man to have a discussion with? Eric and I would be chatting about this stuff anyway, even if we weren't recording it. But I figured, why not? It was great to have it. So the bee hummingbird of Cuba is the smallest bird in the world, and it almost lays the smallest egg. Its egg is absolutely tiny, but it is just beaten by the second smallest bird in the world, a close relative called the vervain hummingbird. And the vervain hummingbird is found only in Jamaica and on the island of Hispaniola. So the vervain hummingbird of Jamaica, Dominican Republic and Haiti, it lays the smallest egg in the world of any bird. However, proportionately, it's still a pretty big egg for that bird, because the bird is tiny and the egg, you've got to remember, it has to contain the yolk, it has to contain all the albumin, the white, and then it has to contain that growing embryo. The egg is about a centimeter in length, 10 millimeters, you know, so very, very small. But for the size of the bird, it's still quite a big egg. You then go to the biggest bird in the world living today, which would be the ostrich, which lays the biggest egg. It's absolutely massive. But compared to the size of the body, it's actually one of the smallest birds proportionate to the bird that laid it.
Oh my goodness.
It's just a whole big discussion that Eric and I had. And then we finally settled on what actually is...
Oh, don't tell us.
I won't, but what is perhaps the most impressive bird? There is one bird in the world where the poor female has to lay an egg that's up to around a quarter of her own body weight.
Oh, wow.
And so that's pretty serious.
Painful, and, I would have thought.
So if you tune into the documentary to find out who that is.
Okay, now I want to mention at this point the guillemot, Niles. So the guillemot, will you describe what a guillemot looks like, where we can find it?
So every summer in Birdwatch Ireland and here at Mooney Goes Wild, we are inundated with people reporting sightings of penguins around the Irish coast. Mm. They'll say, there's a penguin at the beach in Bray, or there's a penguin off Salt Hill Strand. And is that unusual? And the fact is, it's not a penguin. It's almost always a guillemot, a very penguin-like bird, a member of the auk family, which includes the puffin. That's probably the most famous auk. Guillemots nest in big colonies on sea cliffs all around the North Atlantic, including here in Ireland. And they do look very like penguins. They are dark brown / black above, white below, as are many seabirds. They have that upright stance with a waddle just like a penguin. But unlike penguins, they can fly, and they can fly up to the breeding ledges to nest. And in these colonies, that you can have tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of pairs of these guillemots all side by side, densely packed in on these narrow little breeding ledges. So all of these thousands of eggs, how can the parent birds tell them apart? Well, what's actually happened there is that the guillemot has developed perhaps the most complex array of egg coloration of any bird in the world. They look so different from each other. You wouldn't think that the same species had laid them, at least based on colour. But what you'll also hear in the documentary, when we talk to Tim Burkhead, a leading expert ornithologist on birds' eggs, he describes how the actual shape of the guillemot egg is very distinctive, and that's how you tell them apart. It was long believed, and you'll hear so many bird watchers still saying this, that the pear-shaped, very elongated, pointed shape of the guillemot egg is so that it won't roll off the breeding ledge. It'll just go around in a circle if knocked. Now, it turns out that's absolutely untrue. That's not the case at all. Those ledges are so narrow, it would still easily fall off. However, it does allow more of the egg to contact the surface of that ledge, increasing the friction, which prevents or reduces the likelihood of it actually rolling in the first place.
Now, he wrote a book about eggs.
He did, called The Most Perfect Thing. And it's a phenomenal book. I would definitely recommend it to anybody who wants to take their interest in birds' eggs further. It explains everything so well.
We had him on Mooney Goes Wild some years ago, and we have a clip of him explaining why he actually wrote the book, which is related to the spinning, or the belief that this egg, the guillemot egg, was shaped such that it wouldn't spin off the ledge. Have a listen.
I was watching a wildlife television programme, and the presenter, much loved and respected presenter, gave this spinning like a top explanation for the guillemot's egg shape. And that, as I say, that spinning like a top explanation had been dismissed 100 years ago. So I was a bit shocked. And as somebody who's been preoccupied with educating students, the idea that somebody on television, incredibly influential, could misinform the public kind of touched a nerve with me. And it made me think, well, actually, nobody's really looked at why guillemot eggs are this shape. So I started to look again. And the key study was published originally in German with a very brief English summary, and people had used that English summary. So I paid a German-speaking colleague in the university here to translate the whole paper. It was a nightmare because it was a huge paper and it cost a fortune. But it revealed that the experiments that had been conducted by this Swiss ethologist, Beat Chans, and his colleagues were not quite as robust as the summary statements seemed to imply. And it made me realise that here was a research opportunity. We could start to look at this seriously in a bit more detail and with the benefit of many, many more years of kind of knowledge and methodology and so on. So that was the starting point. If you're going to do that, you have to know a lot about eggs. So I started to read widely about eggs. And then I kind of realised that nobody had ever written about eggs from a biological perspective. And there was a good reason for that. The idea of people collecting eggs, for most of us, is anathema. So basically, the topic of eggs was what I call the forbidden area of ornithology. So some conservation organisations won't even publish a photograph of an egg or a bird's nest because they're so terrified that this might cause a resurgence of egg collecting, which it won't, of course. And in fact, when I wrote my book, part of my motivation was to try to break through this kind of cultural roadblock that said you don't study eggs. So there is a huge resistance to eggs, and really my motivation was to show people that eggs were wonderful, the most perfect thing, fascinating, worthy of study, lots of questions still remaining to be answered. And so that was the motivation for writing that book. The reason for focusing to some extent on guillemots is that I've studied guillemots since the 1970s. I'm passionately involved in guillemots, and they have the most extreme form of egg and coloration of egg of any species, certainly in Britain. And so it was a perfect combination of those two things working together.
Tim Burkhead's explanation for why guillemot eggs are shaped the way they are will be revealed in the documentary next Monday, right here on RTE Radio 1. Now, were you one of those people telling others that that was the reason why the guillemot egg was shaped the way it was, so it wouldn't roll off the ledge?
Up until I read Tim's book, yes, that was the widely held belief, and he's completely blown that out of the water and proven the real reason why the eggs are that shape. And it's a couple of reasons, actually. You'll hear more in the documentary. But yes, they are that shape because of the nesting conditions of those birds and because they're on the ledges, but it's not to stop them
rolling off. Who is the BBC wildlife presenter? That's what we want to know. He wouldn't say the name.
No, I'm afraid we don't have that exclusive during the documentary.
All right, anyway. Listen, let's say hello now to Terence Flanagan. By the way, you can hear that documentary, Nature on One special, Birds, Eggs, next Monday afternoon. It's the bank holiday, fantastic time to listen to the radio and especially nature programmes at 3 p.m. presented by Niall Hatch. Let's say hello to Terry Flanagan now at his home in Dublin 15. Terry, you were working on that programme as well, were you not? You were down in Photo Wildlife Park recently looking at curlews and incubation.
I was indeed. And speaking of incubation, I used to incubate eggs myself, Derek. I never told you that. But years ago in school, particularly with transition years, one of the projects we used to do was we used to incubate eggs. I found it fascinating at the time because there's a fair bit to it. It's not just as simple as getting an incubator and throwing a few eggs in it and leaving it there for a couple of weeks.
No.
You have to look after the eggs. It's a bit like the mammy bird does. You have to turn the eggs every day, but twice a day. You have to spray them to keep it nice and humid. But it's really great when they hatch out. Now, what I was actually hatching out were pheasant eggs. And the reason why I was hatching those pheasant eggs, because there were eggs that had been abandoned in a local estate beside me because there had been a lot of pheasants there. And if the adult pheasants had been disturbed and that, I was giving them a bit of a handout by taking them and then incubating them and doing it in school. So, yeah, it was really, really interesting.
It's interesting to me, Terry, that quite a few people think that if they get chickens' eggs from the supermarket and put them in some sort of incubator or under a heat lamp or something like that, that they're going to hatch out. Now, in the vast majority of cases, that is not going to happen because those eggs have not been fertilised. You need to have the rooster around in order to do that. Chickens have been bred so that the females will lay eggs even though those eggs haven't been fertilised and they haven't mated, which is quite unusual in the bird world. So is that something you've ever come across anyone trying?
No, I've never ever come across it. As I said, it was only just a small little project we were doing. We were just hatching out these eggs. And the reason why we were doing it then is that we were bringing the young birds back up to the estate for them to be released again. So it was just something. And you know what? I enjoyed it, particularly for the kids' sake in school. It was one of those things that they never ever got to see. You know, Dublin kids don't get to see these things. But the kids in Moyle Park, well, they got to see it.
Well, I went to school back in the 70s and the 80s and we had an incubator in school and I saw it myself. So a lot of people would have seen it and I'm a dub, Terrence.
What did you incubate?
Eggs. I don't know what kind of eggs they were.
Warm your sandwiches, was it, at lunch?
I don't know, they were eggs. I don't know what kind of eggs they were, but we did do it, yeah.
Never came across any other science teacher who was ever doing it. So, well, you know, maybe I didn't look hard enough, but it was just something small, something we did and that the kids really got to enjoy because it's part of biology. It's part of life.
And just to stress as well that people shouldn't go out to birds' nests in their garden, take eggs and then incubate them. It would be illegal and in most cases it's not going to work anyway. But so please don't do that. But you can get these things commercially. There are many people who have chickens and are fertilised eggs and it's possible to do that. But Terry, I know that when you were doing it, you mentioned that there's more to it than meets the eye or than people would assume. I was talking earlier to Derek about the blue tits that were in his back garden and the famous nest watch that we did a few years back and how active the parents were, not just in sitting on the eggs, but in turning them over and putting the ones from the top down to the bottom and so on to make sure that the heat was evenly distributed. That's a really crucial part of it, isn't it? The eggs don't just sit there, they need to move.
Absolutely. But isn't it amazing? Isn't nature amazing how that motherboard knows exactly what to do, when to turn them and when to bring the ones from the bottom up to the top to know exactly what temperature to keep them at? I found that incredible because when you're doing, you have to have a thermometer in the incubator so that you can keep an eye on the temperature. You have to watch the humidity that's present inside the incubator. You have to turn the eggs. You have to move them from the centre to the outside. Like, there is a fair bit about it, but I had a set of instructions. I could follow the instructions. For the mammy birds, it was just, it came naturally to her. So it is fairly complex. It's not just a simple thing of sitting on eggs.